Well, the last of the autumn leaves are probably waiting to be picked up on your curb, but I hope you don't get rid of them just yet. We're about to find out how you can reuse and recycle those leaves over the winter months. Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Really pleased to have back Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension. She works out of Kenosha County and comes by every so often. It's always so much fun when she comes by to talk about what's going on in the garden. And a lot of November garden chores there to be done yet, at least a few for me. I hope not too many for you, but she's got some great advice. And if you have a question or comment, maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And I'd love, if you got a garden, fall garden photo or a gardening shot, put it up on our Facebook page. I always love to see those photos. Well, Barb, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm real happy to be back. So as I was driving into Madison today, I'm noticing all the leaves raked out along the edge of the street. And I'm going, no, 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 don't throw those away.
Well, you know what I've been doing this year, and it's for the first time. I have an electric mower, which runs on a cord. I'm not so sure I'd ever do that again. But anyway, it's a mulching mower. And I decided this year I'm going to mulch all my leaves right back into the lawn.
Yep.
And I have these recalcitrant trees. I have one tree that loses all, in one neighbor next door on the one side, loses all its leaves. The big tree on the other side waits until that one's done, and then it starts losing its leaves. So it's kind of like over time, kids keep stretching out. But you know what? That actually worked to my advantage this year because I didn't have such a thick batch of leaves, and I just ran the mower over them.
Yeah, and that works great as long as you don't have huge amounts. Or the other thing is that gardeners will even, and I've done this too, when you mow that last time, put the bag on and then pick them up, and then you've got that nice mix of green and brown get your compost pile really kind of kick-started for the season too.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So you can do that. You can also pick them up. I love the leaves as a mulch for especially for perennials. Mm-hmm. So you can either put them in, rake them in the fall, which is what I normally do, so I don't have to handle them twice.
Yeah.
Or some people, especially if you have a lot of maples or oaks where the leaves tend to kind of flatten out when they're in mat together, that can be a problem in the perennial bed. So some people will either mow them or chop them up and then put them in a corner and then use them for mulch in the spring around in their beds.
That's a very good idea.
Yeah.
What else is going on? In my own backyard, we have our straw bale garden thing going. So I actually got the tomatoes and all of the different vines and so forth out of the bales and took the strings off and there's a little left. I let it sit there, and I'm going to use it next spring. It'll be right there.
Oh, yeah. You could do that if your bales, sometimes those bales decompose so far that instead you may want to just kind of break them apart and use them again as a mulch. If you have an established vegetable garden, that could always be raked or moved over to that and then tilled in with other kinds of organic matter in the fall, so that continues to kind of break down that way.
If there's still left, some left in the spring, I'm going to pull a Ruth Stout. And I don't know if you know about Ruth Stout's garden. You should look at the online video of that.
Okay.
Anyway, she planted her potatoes and one thing and another, right? And she just lift up the straw that had been there from the year before and throw the potato pieces in there, and that was it. That's how she gardened.
Well, I mean, that's a raised bed right there.
So I'm gonna experiment and try. I'm just gonna, if I've got some left, I'm just gonna kind of pile them up a bit, and throw some potatoes in there and see what happens.
Okay. All right. We'll see what happens. I'll wait in the spring or summer. You can report there.
What else should we be doing, though, in the fall?
Yeah, fall's the great time to do soil testing.
Absolutely.
So it's actually the perfect time. So go out. Recommendations for how to do the soil test and the soil test forms are on the UW Soil Testing Lab website. You don't have to have a special soil testing bag. You can just use a zip top bag and send your soil test in that way. If your soil in your garden and yard is fairly consistent, you only really need to have one soil test. But if you have a vegetable garden and that's a little different than the lawn, you may have to do two soil tests for it. And you basically go out and get about 8 or 10 spots in the garden, dig down, take a trowel full of soil, put it into a clean bucket, mix it up so you have a composite sample, and then send it in the soil testing lab. It's well worth the fee because you also get a recommendation back. Make sure you tell the soils lab what you're growing in that spot because they'll base their recommendation on that. We started Master Gardener training a few weeks ago, and one of the things I ask in the soils class at the beginning is how many in the class have ever done a soil test, and it's usually 20%. Well, usually there's about 10 or 20%. Do you think about it? A long-term gardeners, you really need to think about having a soil test about every 5 years. It can tell you so much. And I like the fall because then that gives us that 10 days to 2 weeks to get the results back. And a lot of additions you can put in the fall, and then you're ready for the springtime.
Yeah, I was actually thinking now, I'm probably going to run the lawnmower. And, of course, people in the north are saying, oh, yeah, you're running the lawnmower. We got 5 inches of snow on the ground.
No.
I'm going to run it once more. But then this weekend, I was going to put some fertilizer down on the lawn. I have not done a fall fertilization. And it was always Halloween was what...
But Dr. Doug Soldat, who's our turf grass specialist, did some research a few years ago. And what he found is that Halloween fertilization, it really isn't used by the lawn.
Then what's the use?
Right, exactly. So he's changed his recommendations. And about the last time in Wisconsin, even in the southern part of the state, that we would want to fertilize the lawn is about the middle of October. So we're kind of well past that. So do that last mowing. That's important for those of us in the southern part of the state. Sometimes we'll bring the mowing height down. So instead of it having it 3 inches, we want it down to 2.5 inches. Mm-hmm. And then getting those leaves up, a few chopped up are just fine in the lawn. But otherwise, hold off for that fertilization until now next spring.
Okay, well, you just saved me a little bit of time and a couple of bucks.
If you haven't. Otherwise, save it over the winter.
And Doug actually told me once that mulching in those leaves is about equivalent to a one fertilizer application.
Yeah, and we know that returning the clippings to the lawn, so using a mulching mower, or even if you don't have a mulching mower, just leaving the clippings on because they break down usually within a couple of days, you can cut out a full fertilization because it recycles those, that nitrogen,
Well, Sherry in La Crosse has a question for you, Barb, so let's go there. Sherry, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, love your show.
Well, thank you very much, and what can we do for you?
Well, I have a question. Is it better to, I've got some shrubs, a burning bush, spirea, and I think it's a wirgala or something like that. And is it better to trim those in the fall or in spring before they bud?
Well, most of the time, so this sounds like, oh, it ought to be an easy answer, but it's not. A lot of it depends on the kind that you have and when it blooms. So certainly something like a burning bush doing fall pruning or early spring, we don't worry too much about the flowers. They're not that showy. So shaping it would be fine. They're basically a single stem shrub. Most of the time we do the pruning in that March or very early April before they start to bud out or even late February. Okay. But they can be done in late fall after the leaves drop. So you mentioned Wigelia. Most of that blooms kind of the new growth. So you could go ahead and shape that one also. That one's not a, that doesn't sucker a lot either. It doesn't send up a lot of shoots. So that's another one where I would more shape it, cut it back to a side butter branch. And then the other one you mentioned was Spirea. And do you have the pink summer blooming Spirea? Or do you have the white spring?
I've got the pink summer bloom.
Okay. Those also are ones that actually bloom on their new growth, so you could trim those back. What I do with the in those multi-stem shrubs, if you always, the kind of safe answer for any of those multi-stemmed ones, is cutting out about a third of the largest, biggest stems right back at the ground line or as close to the ground as you can get. And you can do that shortly after they bloom for the spring blooming ones, that spring into early into June. The summer bloomers, as long as they're those multi-stemmed, you can do those in fall or you can do it again in spring.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay.
Well, that helps. Thank you very much.
All right. Yeah. You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Sherry. Thank you for calling. Tom in Windsor, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm just on my way to the store to buy some grass seed to scatter around the yard in various spots. I live in Dane County. Is that still okay, or am I?
Well, are you trying to feed the birds?
Well, that's what the bird feeders, though. I'm guessing you're saying that.
Yeah, that's. I'm being sarcastic. So no, I wait until April to spread grass seed. So it's really actually the ideal time to seed a lawn is that late August into early September time period. But April, early May is another good time. But putting it on now, most of it will either, if it's wet enough, it'll just rot right there and disappear, or it actually is true. The birds will eat it and that kind of thing, too.
There you go.
Okay,
so.
Well, you just saved me a few dollars.
Thanks. Okay, right. Yeah, save there it for go. Spring.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, if you have a question or comment. Our guest today, Barb Larson, and Barb is the horticulture educator for Kenosha County. Always great to have her along. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post a photo and or question on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page. Ruth in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. You caught my ear when you were talking about the leaves, and especially maple leaves.
Yeah.
Yep.
We don't have maple trees, but our neighbors do.
Yeah.
And they don't rake. And by the time the wind blows them into our yard, the leaf sucker upper is long gone.
Yeah.
So my poor son is raking them up and hauling them to the yards. And now Larry said something about a mulching mower. We don't have a mulching mower. And there are maple leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Is that too heavy to try to mow into the lawn? And this is a lot of leaves, but they blow over a little at a time. If we just keep mowing and mowing and mowing until it snows, is that okay with stuff like maples and not a mulching mower?
Yeah, you don't have to have a mulching mower in order to mow over the leaves. Any mower will chop them up so that they're finer. That's fine. That's good. What you want to avoid is big clumps of leaves on the grass. Grass doesn't mind, you know, little bits. And as Larry mentioned earlier, that recycling. We also talked about earlier the other option is raking them into a pile in the back corner even of your yard and letting them decompose over the winter and then using them in your beds in the spring or summer. You can even use them around, I mentioned perennials, but you can use them around trees and shrubs. That's fine. I've also raked maple leaves just into my into shrub beds in the fall.
Sure.
Yeah.
They'll decompose.
Yeah. They.
Okay.
But I really, and if you're mowing them into the lawn, sometimes you'll wind up, like I do even with a mulching mower, you'll have like a new row of kind of a little pile, and then I just run that over that again. I'm telling you, it's a lot simpler than
I'm thinking. Yeah, great, thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Barb Larson, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Cynthia Schuster, our on-air producer on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here on this edition of Garden Talk, visiting with Barb Larson, horticulture educator for Kenosha County. Lots of callers. In fact, every one of our lines is filled right now, but the number is 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Got a great photo on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, from Mary, who says, I have an English walnut tree in my yard. It has to be quite old, as we've been here for 30 years. Problem is, it's only provided nuts for me twice. First time I had just a few, but squirrels got most of them. About 3 years later, I was fortunate to get about a 5-quart pail full. I need suggestions as to how to take care of this tree. I sure would like to gather nuts from it again. I'm in Dodgeville, Wisconsin. And, boy, that's one we don't come in contact.
No, there aren't that. I mean, we have a lot of black walnuts, of course, but we don't have very many, which are native. We don't have very many English walnuts. I'm wondering, and this is one where I'd have to research to make sure, a lot of plants don't produce as many fruits if they can't cross with another one. So I'm wondering if
she needs
two English walnuts in order to really have pretty good fruit production on them. I don't know if you want to start another walnut tree or not, or another English walnut. Sometimes if you have something that's fairly closely related, it will help, but not always. So you say, Mary, you're welcome to email me it, and I can do some further research for you. And get back to you on it. But my guess is it has to do with it's just not got anything to cross with. And you've kind of lucked out more than anything else on the ones that you've had for some reason.
And Barb's email, I think our phone is, I think we have it posted. We have it up on our Facebook page, Cynthia. I think we do.
Or, you can always go to our county website, which is kenosha.uwex.edu, and if you go to the staff, that's probably the fastest way to find it. Or you can actually Google me. I'm sure, and with Barb Larson, Wisconsin Extension, and it'll pop up.
Cynthia's going to put it up on our Facebook page too, so that'll make it easy. We had, speaking of Facebook and emails and so forth, a listener named John emailed in and said, 3 days ago my crocus grew and bloomed. I planted them 2 fall seasons ago. They never came up until now. And the weather has been in the 30s and the low 40s. Is this unusual? Well, a little unusual.
But. Yeah, and I have no idea what those crocus are thinking.
Yeah, so. I don't either. So it's you can rest assured it's unusual, and hopefully they'll come back. I don't think they'll be able to come back in the spring, will they?
Well, they may. I mean, they may. You know, the spring blooming bulbs, their actual growing seasons are fall, winter when it's warm enough, and then in spring, and they're dormant in the summertime. Now, if the leaves will come back, then the question is, will they kind of reset themselves so that I doubt they will bloom next spring, but would they bloom the following spring?
Okay.
So I have no idea. Now, the other, well, except that's 2 years ago. I don't know that it'd do it. If they are forced, so if you buy them in bloom in a pot, that often will kind of really mess up the cycle on them. So that's usually why if you have forced bulbs, we tell people, you know, go ahead, you can plant them, but it may throw the cycle off. But it's usually only that first season and that first year if they survive. So with this 2 years, I don't know what's going on exactly.
And Ralph from Green Bay had a good idea. He has a tip here about instead of buying a mulching mower like I did, you can install a mulching blade on your standard mower. And I didn't realize you could do that, but he obviously has done it, and then you just keep it on all the time. And
yeah.
So you essentially, suddenly you have a mulching mower.
Sounds good to me.
That sounds good to me, too. Jim in Janesville. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Great show again. I sure appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
Hey, I've got a question today. I have a couple of butterfly bushes and some other things in a bed in the back. And I picked up some of the milkweed pods earlier this year and, you know, turned over some dirt. I want to help those get a good start. I don't know if the leaves will help or what might help, you know, to help the butterflies get milkweed plants growing up so the monarchs have a place to go back here. Is there any advice?
So I just want to clarify what you're asking. Have you collected the seeds and you want to know just about planting them and what to do?
Yep, exactly right. I've got three or four of the pods, you know.
Okay.
Full of the seeds.
Yeah, I would do exactly what Mother Nature does, which is get those planted in the soil this fall, so they will go through the winter season, and hopefully they will just pop right up. Most milkweeds, especially if you collected them from, you know, kind of what came up and kind of as weeds, quote, and I'm doing quotations in there, they should go ahead and come up next spring. It may take a year or two before they'll bloom, but I would treat them that way.
There we go.
Should I cover the seeds? I've got kind of just raw dirt out there now.
Well, you would want to, you know, most things would be like planting any other seed. You want to go down about twice the width of the seed. So you're not going very deep. So basically just put them just slightly under the soil level and pat them in and water them in. And
there
I think they should be fine.
All right. I keep hearing stories about the monarchs, you know, not doing so well. So I thought, well, I'll try to help.
Yep, yeah. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you, my milkweed, it wasn't touched all summer. And now just this fall, and I think, boy, the leaves just started to be eaten away. And they really did a job on, which was great. That's exactly what, and I was hoping it was monarchs that were doing it. I only saw one.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the same point I was going to make, which is, remember, if you want monarchs, you have to have the caterpillars. So,
yeah.
And that's what you're actually doing, is you're providing not only an adult feed source, but more importantly, the food source for the caterpillars. And they're going to eat those leaves.
Yeah, they definitely are. Thanks again, Jim. Pam and Kellogg, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning. I, too, love your show every week.
Thank you.
I have two, actually thought my second question also. Could you explain the difference between a seed geranium and a zonal geranium? And then I also planted a little apple tree that was only about 6 or 8 inches. And if I use my leaves to mulch around that, won't that encourage the mice to maybe chew it off?
Okay.
Yes.
So, yeah, I was going to say, let's do the second one first. So,
okay. Yes,
one of the things, and you do bring up the good point, is being very careful if you're putting leaves and things around trees and shrubs, especially if you have problems with rodents, and the meadow mice or voles would be the most obvious one. Don't put them right up against the trunks or against the crowns of the plants, because that gives them a great hiding place and they will go up and they'll girdle it. And if you have a small apple tree, or actually a small tree of any kind, you may want to either use one of those kind of springy looking tree wrap protection plastic things. Just make sure you take it all off in the spring. You could also use tree wrap, and that's like paper kind of wrap stuff. Start at the soil line and then wrap up so it overlaps like a shingle. And the other is, some people, especially if you have a lot of problems with voles, is you could use something like a hardware cloth or a fairly fine mesh screen and wrap that around, but leave it out an inch or two from the trunk, because you don't want it rubbing on the trunk during the wintertime. And any of these, make sure you take them off in the spring.
But since it's so small, shouldn't it still be mulched or something?
Yeah, but pull the mulch away, 2 or 3 inches away from the trunk of the tree.
Right.
Okay. And then seed and zonal geraniums, I think the main difference is propagation and how they're propagated, seed by seed often, and zonal probably more by cuttings.
Oh, okay. There well, I have a few zonal ones that were so gorgeous this year and last year that I've kept them over winter for the last 2 years. And it seems like the zonals do so much better than the seed.
Mm-hmm.
They just get huge.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand why that happens.
Yeah. And if you're having luck with them that way, which it sounds like for
Boy,
2 years,
yeah.
definitely can just continue what you're doing.
Right. Okay.
Yep.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Yep. Thanks, Pam. And Sue in Milwaukee. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I really love your show.
Thank you.
I mainly have swamp white oaks. We have one red oak in the yard, and when its leaves dropped this fall, in the last couple of weeks, they're just peppered with quarter-inch round holes. Any idea what attacked that?
No.
Okay.
There's so many different possibilities. There's could be one of the caterpillars. There's some beetles. There's sawflies. There's lots of things that are chewing types of insects. And at this point, I wouldn't worry about it at all.
No.
I mean, occasionally we'll even have where I'll get samples of leaves in summertime, and there's holes in them, and it's from wind damage. As the leaf starts to expand in the spring, we have a real cold snap, and there's some frost damage on the leaves. And when it opens, then it makes these kind of irregular-looking holes. So there's just so many different possibilities. I would keep an eye on it in the spring and summer. But most plants, especially well-established trees and shrubs, can take an awful lot of feeding damage and disease damage before it harms their health at all.
Yeah. Oh, it's nice that you have some swamp whites, too.
Mm-hmm.
Those
now
are...
we're loaded with those. I'd rather have more reds.
Ah!
Yeah. Well, it's nice to have the diversity. That's really important.
Yeah, what you don't got, I suppose.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sue. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, we have a swamp white oak on campus that on the College of Ag and Life Sciences campus that is just gorgeous. It is a beautiful, beautiful tree, and it's one that I admire pretty much every day. I go by and see that swamp white oak, and glad that it's not an oak. It must do a good job of fending off oak wilt.
Well, the round-leafed oaks, which swamp white is, tend to be less susceptible or tend to fight off oak wilt better than the
better
pointy
than the
ones. Dens. Yeah. Yep.
A lot better than the reds. Rich in Madison, hi.
Yes. I'm going to belabor the leaf disposal, but what I used to do now, when we lived in the country, and these were people that have a bigger yard and a garden and that, but I would take all my leaves and make a big pile, and to that, throughout the year, I would add all my garden waste or kitchen waste, other than meat products, but peelings and stuff like that, and that would go into that pile of leaves, and I would do that continually throughout the year, and by the fall, as the leaves were falling, that pile would be just all decomposed and just black, and I would wheelbarrow, load up in the wheelbarrow, go and put it in my garden, spread it on the flower beds, and start the whole process over again with the new fall leaves.
Yeah.
So it was great doing that.
Thanks. That's a great description of composting.
that's perfect, Rich. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that really, and man, the value of that is so valuable for you to add as an amendment to your, an addition to your soil.
Yeah, it just astounds me when people, gardeners go out and spend as much money as they do purchasing organic matter, and we preach that all the time. And yet they throw all that organic matter away every fall, or to me, even worse, they burn it. So it's just, right, exactly, recycle it in your yard.
Thanks, Rich. Appreciate your call very much. You can join in, too. Finally have an open line here at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions. Samantha wonders, by the way, if it's too late to plant bulbs in deforest.
You can plant bulbs as long as you can dig the soil. So it's not too late.
And Brianna on Facebook says, I just dug out the last of my carrots from my raised vegetable beds this morning. What can I do this fall to prepare for spring planting? Can I add commercial fertilizer now?
Well, I guess I would start back with even with a raised bed, you may want to have a soil test done if you haven't had that done in the last 5 years so that you know whether you need to add anything. For most raised beds, it's the theme of the show. This is a great time to work leaves or other kinds of organic matter in to help prepare it for next spring planting. So I wouldn't add commercial fertilizer right now unless you see or you get a soil test result that says that your bed needs particularly something like potassium, which I doubted, or yeah. Sulfur or, you know, some of those kinds of things. But most of the time I hold off.
Marianne in New London, thanks a lot for calling. Hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Say, as a result of construction around our house, we had to pull up a giant blue hosta, and I'm wondering whether or not I'm going to be able to winter that out of the ground, or am I going to lose it?
Do you have a choice? Can you put it in the ground anyplace?
Not for a couple of weeks yet.
Okay.
You could dig the hole.
Yeah, it could dig the hole. I'm sure. That's a possibility. Let's see, New London. You may be far enough south. The ground usually doesn't freeze until after Thanksgiving, so it might even be possible then to go ahead and put it in the ground. Otherwise, I'd put it in a pot and then put it in just like you're potting up any kind of potted plant, and then try to keep it in a cool location where it's like an unattached garage or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And I dig, if you have the time, I dig the hole now.
Yeah.
It's easier to dig the hole now than a month from now or a few weeks from now.
Yeah.
I should say.
And if you can get it back in the ground, which is the ideal, then make sure that after the ground freezes or it gets really cold after you've transplanted it back, got it back into the ground, then put either straw or fluffy leaves or something like that over it to help insulate it a little better.
All right. There we go. Thanks,
good.
Marianne.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gus in Green Bay. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Gus. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I have a question regarding bur oak. We've got some woods west of Green Bay. And I've got trees that I hunt by that maybe every 3 out of 5 years they drop acorns. And then there are some that never drop acorns. And I'm just wondering if there's a male female tree in this species.
There are not in the bur oaks. But what you described where it seems like every 2 to 3 years you get lots of acorns or a lot more and then other years you don't get much of any is pretty typical of a lot of trees. That's called alternate year bearing. So they'll have a lot of fruit production, nut production 1 year, and then the following year or even couple of years, they will produce some but not very many. So mm-hmm. That's pretty typical pattern in these bur oaks.
Yeah, very, very typical.
But some that never drop acorns.
Well, I mean, sometimes it's who knows why they're not producing acorns, but they are not separate male and female trees.
Yeah, okay.
It may just be they're not getting. I mean, they're wind pollinated, so you know who knows. You would think that if it's a whole group of them, they would cross pollinate. That wouldn't be a problem, but I have no idea.
Well, there's one here, there, over here. You know, they're not next to each other.
Well, that doesn't matter. Yeah. This would be close enough. They're wind pollinated.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Gus. Thank you very much for calling. Beth emailed us and said, I tried hay bales for the first time this year. for gardening, and they worked great. However, I planted oregano in them. Uh-oh. What do I do now to build the bed back up for my oregano for next year? Do I have to move the oregano, or can I mulch around the plants or place new bales around them? I have a couple of rows of oregano.
That's a lot of oregano. I like oregano, too. But
yeah, that is a lot of oregano.
I'm not making fun of you, Beth. I'm glad you're growing that. Oregano is a perennial, and it's pretty tough. So I don't know that you need to do much of anything, even with the straw bales. I mean, Larry was just talking earlier about trying to plant potatoes in his mostly decomposed straw bales next year. So I wouldn't worry about it very much. And generally, they're pretty hardy. So
yeah.
I think they're about a four most of the types of oregano. So I think you'll be fine. I just leave mine up so that I can run out and even snip some off for throwing in the spaghetti sauce in the wintertime.
Yeah, why not? Janet in Clintonville, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello. We have a successful garden in northern Wisconsin, and the soil tested low in potassium and phosphorus. I read in the paper that leaves are good for both of those, and my husband blew the leaves onto the garden and then tilled it. Should he have done something to those leaves, like chopping them up first?
No, tilling them in helps chop them up, and they will decompose over the wintertime when we have, and they are right now, so yeah. They're already decomposing. I don't know if, depending on how deficient your soil is in phosphorus and potassium, you may have to add something more than leaves to them. So this might even be worth a follow-up soil test in the spring, in this case, or even later on next year. Kind of keep an eye on things. But first of all, phosphorus deficiency is fairly rare in Wisconsin.
That is very rare. So you're northern. What county in Wisconsin?
Vilas.
Okay.
So you sandy soil?
Yeah.
No, it's compost. Cranberry compost mostly.
Oh, okay. So that's what you're planting in is cranberry, like a raised bed with cranberry compost?
Yes.
Okay. And so when you sent the soil test in, did you tell them it was a compost?
Yes, it was a friend who did the soil test with his equipment.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right. So in that case, because you're mostly working in organic matter anyway, you may have to look at other ways to add phosphorus and potassium. So depends on whether you like to go down the more organic road and use those kinds of products, or whether you don't mind using a synthetic. So you could use anything from, think of bone meal, which would be the phosphorus. There's usually some potassium in that. Some of the organic fertilizers can be fairly high in phosphorus and potassium. You may hunt around for those. But you could also use a synthetic fertilizers that are high in phosphorus and potassium, too.
There you go.
And I'd work them in yet this fall, then.
Yeah. It wouldn't hurt, especially if you've got a lot of leaves in there. It's going to tie some nitrogen up, too, to be perfectly honest. So when it's as it decomposes, so probably wouldn't hurt. Good luck, Jana. Thank you for calling. Cheryl in Wauwatosa, your turn. Hi.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Well, I did something last spring that I know I shouldn't have done, and I paid the price for it. I have chickens, and early in the spring, before it was even time to do vegetables, I did throw in some of the shavings and some of the chicken manure into my garden, probably too much because I know it's high in nitrogen. And when I planted my tomatoes, they grew up great, huge, green, and I got no fruit.
Yeah.
So I learned the lesson the hard way. But my question is there something now in the fall that I should be doing to bring that nitrogen level down? I'll never do that again. I'll never put that in there again, but I think it's pretty high, or will it have worked its way out by the time next spring comes?
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. First of all, your tomatoes took up a lot of that nitrogen, so
yeah,
that's part of it. And nitrogen tends to really change a lot in formulations and everything. It's very dynamic in the soil and also in the atmosphere. So I really wouldn't worry about it. Just don't add more chicken manure fall or in the spring.
That was a bad idea. I thought it would be okay because I had wood shavings with it. I thought it would kind of even it out, but it didn't.
Well, and what the wood shavings do is the manure help to offset the as the shavings were decomposing.
Yeah, they were tying nitrogen.
Yes, right. The microorganisms use nitrogen to decompose those wood shavings, but there just wasn't enough in there. Now, I wouldn't put wood shavings in and everything again, and there's nothing wrong with chicken manure, just I would use either partially composted or in much smaller amounts.
And, you know, just think about it, too, that a lot of people complained about their tomato harvest this year. So there could be a few other things going on.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm going to do what you said and have the soil test done. And can you just say again what the website is for getting the information about the soil test?
University of Wisconsin Soil Testing Lab or Soil Test Lab.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
Mm-hmm. Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Patrick in Heartland, your turn. Thanks, Patrick, for calling.
Hi. A couple of years ago, my wife's parents passed away, and we moved the peony bush. And it doesn't seem to be thriving very well. The first year it seemed to be okay, and the last couple of years it's not doing very well. And I'm wondering, is it good to transplant it in the fall now or the spring? I think I'd need to get it into a more sunny location.
Okay. It's really too late to transplant it now. I would be afraid of it popping out of the ground if we get a lot of freezing and thawing during the wintertime. Peonies, as you mentioned, do like full sun, and they will do better in full sun. The other thing is transplanted peonies don't do well, and especially if they don't bloom. The other problem is they can get planted too deeply. So make sure that you get it so that crown, those little what are called the eyes, the new sprouts, are just when you transplant it in the spring, like early in May or so, are just right below the ground.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Barb Larson, our guest today, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network for this edition of Garden Talk, visiting with Barb Larson, horticulture extension educator for Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller. Cynthia Schuster, our on-air producer. Thank you so much for listening in. Lois in Eau Claire has a question, so let's go to Lois. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. My question is, I have a William Baffin climbing rose on the southwest side of the house. It's 12 years old, doing well. It's right up against the house, and I do have my share of critters that roam around, and little rodents, their path is right along there. Now, for the winter, I have some winters not really covered it at the base. Other winters, yes. It seems to do well, but what is the best way with that?
Well, William Baffins are hardy to zone 4, so yep. I think you're still fine in Eau Claire. You know what I do with my William Baffin? Ignore it. I don't do anything with it.
That's pretty much what I've been doing.
Yeah.
And I thought, either I'm bad girl about that, or that's okay.
No, it's okay. It's on its own roots, and It is one of these roses that was developed in order to survive our really cold winters. William Baffin actually was an Arctic explorer, and that's why it's got that name on it.
Oh.
And it was a group that was a whole group of roses that were named and are actually called the Explorer series, and they were developed because they were very cold hardy. So my bigger concern, as you mentioned, you have sometimes problems with rodents.
Yep.
So, you know, if you've got a lot of them, and my William Braffin is really thorny, I don't usually have problems with rodents on them, but you could look at putting some sort of a strip all the way around, out away from the plant of screening or hardware cloth to help keep the rodents away. But if it's doing fine and you've got lots of growth in it and everything, I wouldn't worry about that either.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Mark emailed us and wondered if you could expand on lawn fertilization. If I skip fall fertilization, which she should do now because it's too late, should I also skip winterizer? And well, that's fertilizer too, isn't it?
Yes, winterizer is a fertilizer. So, yep, you're
skip
done
that.
With
yeah.
that.
Does that affect the timing of spring fertilization? I do that early May. That seems early.
And that would be early. So our recommendation or the new recommendations are similar to our old ones, which were around Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. And around Labor Day, mm-hmm. Especially if you have a well-established lawn and it's been fertilizing, it's been regularly fertilized. If it's over 15 years old, that's probably plenty, especially if you're returning the clippings. For those higher maintenance lawns, a little bit newer ones, sometimes you'll get a 4th of July fertilization in there.
Yeah.
But basically, that's it.
Yeah, that's it. And Liz in Walworth Village. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I just want to say that I have a garden plot that had two small trees on either side of it, but they grew up and they're shading my garden too much. So, again, this year I didn't plant anything, but what I've done, and I did this again about 2 weeks ago, is I got all the weeds out of it. And I put the weeds in. I had enough for three large construction black bags, garbage bags. And I put all the weeds in there, and I put them out all winter in full sun. And then in the spring, I open them up, and I have a wonderful, whatever you would call it, dirt, black, compost, whatever you might call it. Mm-hmm. And that was my saying.
Okay, yep.
And that's great. I'm surprised that it composts that quickly, even with the black bags, but,
I was going to say it was probably full sun. It got on those warm days. My only concern or caution with this is because it was in a black plastic bag, it probably did a lot of what's called anaerobic decomposition. So that means that airless or oxygenless. So for people that remembered when we used to collect grass clippings and put them in black bags and put them on the and you'd open them up and that really awful smell would come up, that's from anaerobic decomposition. Before I worked with Liz's, what she's doing, before I put those into a garden or anything where it's been in those black plastic bags, I'd open it up, stir it up a little bit, and make sure it gets well exposed to air so that any of those possibly unfriendly compounds in there would get aerated. Because it can be a little bit harmful to plants. So I would do it that way.
Okay. Thanks, Liz. Thank you for calling. Jim in Oshkosh. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a quarter-acre garden, which used to be a barnyard, and we can grow anything. And this year, I have grown some horseradishes. And I understand you're supposed to wait a couple, 2 or 3 years to harvest. Is there something I should do?
As far as I remember, horseradishes and not only pretty hardy,
you can't get rid of it.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope you've got it sort of contained, Jim.
I do.
Yeah, okay. Good, because I did not have it mine contained, and it was a mess. As that wants to go everywhere,
does that,
so I wouldn't.
Does that mean I would be wise to harvest it this year?
How long's it been in?
Just 1 year.
I would wait and start your harvest next year.
Yeah, okay. You could try a little. You know, I just take a little bit.
As long as they're big and healthy, sure, try it.
Okay, thank you much.
Mm-hmm. Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Dean in Kakana.
Hi, Larry. Good to talk. Hey, I just want to let you know, I good to hear you talking about leaves. I distribute about 4 to 6 inches of leaves throughout my entire garden, and I've been probably doing it for 10 years, and it works great.
Yeah, that's – and just put them out and eventually –
Yeah, I spread out. Yeah, the potatoes work real good. I can just reach under the leaves and harvest them throughout, you know, once they're ready to go and –
Okay. Good.
Get the rest
good.
Of them. So.
Good.
Good. Good to hear you talking about leaves.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, Dean. Thanks a lot for calling. I used to do that. My parents had way more leaves than they wanted, and at one point I lived fairly close to them, and I'd go over and just take all their leaves or as many as I could get and bring them back over to our house and put them in the garden. And well, it was wonderful.
I know so many gardeners that do that. So I should quickly note, don't put black walnut leaves in your garden.
So we
have not mentioned that. Or if you have heavily diseased plants, you want to put them in the garden. But all the rest of them, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Lots of things to do and really some great uses for those leaves in the fall season. Barb Larson, our guest today. Barb is a horticulture educator for the University of Wisconsin Extension, and she works out of Kenosha County with me, Larry Mueller, on Garden Talk. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This edition of Garden Talk, we're fortunate to have Barb Larson with us, horticulture educator for UW Extension, works out of Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller. Cynthia Schuster, our on-air producer today. And if you have a gardening question, I hope you'll join in. We've been talking a lot about the fall in the garden, obviously, and leaves. There are many good comments about how people use their leaves in the fall to make great soil in the spring or just to use as a mulch. There's lots of great opportunities out there. Join in. Questions at 1-800-642-1234. Jamie in West Allis has one for you, Barb. Let's go there. Hi, Jamie.
Thank you for taking my call. I have two real quick questions.
Okay.
I have a rosemary right now that's in a pot, and it's really, really getting pretty big and nice. I want to see if I can keep it. I've never been able to keep them over winter. And I also have a dwarf Alberta spruce in a pot. Last year, I just kind of left it alone, and it did fine. I'm wondering, should I do the same thing for the Alberta spruce? And is it possible to bring my rosemary in over the winter time, or should I just try to maybe cover it up somehow?
So the Alberta spruce, yes, do exactly what you did last year. If it made it through last year's really cold temperatures, it should be just fine this year in the pot outdoors. In fact, you want to leave that outdoors. Rosemary are not cold hardy here, so those have to be brought indoors. They are not happy. They tend to be a little bit finicky, so you may have to try to hunt around to find a good spot for it. I would try like an east window, because you've got that kind of a little bit softer light with that. I used to keep one in a kitchen window, an east kitchen window, and it was fine. I moved to a new house, and it ended up the kitchen window was a southern kitchen window, and I couldn't winter rosemary. You know, just the environment was enough different. So try a couple of different places. Keep it out of a north window, but I'd try to probably, if you can do it, an east window or back a little bit ways in a south window. And be careful, don't overwater them. They are a Mediterranean kind of dry soil plant. So that's the other thing we tend to do. We bring them in and we overwater them.
I've got a rosemary plant that actually keeps limey, my lime tree company. So they're right next to each other, and I put them out in the summer, and then I just bring them in, and that rosemary plant, I haven't named that rosemary. My daughter has not named that rosemary plant. Anyway, it has it's 3 years old in a pot for 3 years.
And what window do you have it? Do you have
actually I have it in a south window?
A south window, okay.
But I also have grow lights.
Oh, okay.
I have in my regular lamp. I've got some of these, the new ones that are low amounts of electricity. Mm-hmm. But are really grow lights.
Yeah. So it really does make a difference. Try if it's not doing well in one spot, try in a little different spot.
Limey has 7 limes right now.
Good for him. Limey's doing well.
Limey's doing really well. At Margaret and Madison, your turn. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I have a small vegetable garden. The last 2 years, I've used dried leaves in the summer to mulch it. The leaves came from bales. They weren't composted or anything. Now, in the fall, should I remove those leaves so they don't harbor pests or plant diseases, or can I leave them and just let them work into the soil?
As long as you didn't have disease in your garden, and we try to do a good garden cleanup if you've had any leaf diseases on tomatoes or any of the other plants that you've had in the garden, but the rest, you can leave it. To me, this is where you kind of work it in a little bit. You don't have to have a rototiller. You can use a spade or anything and just kind of chop them up, work them in a little bit. But it should be fine as long as there's not any disease problems in them.
Okay. And using those dried leaves as mulch, are they depleting the soil in terms of nutrients?
Not usually, especially if they're kind of starting to decompose anyway. It's some of the really fresh light brown stuff like sawdust and those kinds of things. We say don't put those in your vegetable garden. But otherwise, it should be fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And Karen in Plymouth, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for the great show, as always.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, I always mulch my gardens, and including raised beds, with something. This year I use straw. Normally I use marsh hay. And this is the first year I've had tomato blight in many, many years. I know the conditions were a little weird, but I was very meticulous about cleaning up the leaves throughout the season, but should I also pull all that mulch out and destroy it?
So part of it depends on the kind of blight you had. So if it was the Septoria or the early blight, we talk about making sure you get the leaves and that kind of thing, but some of those spores overwinter in the soil, and that's why we usually recommend putting mulch in, because it helps prevent the splash up on that. So if it was one of those two, I'd be a little bit more concerned about it, so I think I might take that straw off. If it was late blight, then that only lives in living tissue in the tomato plant, so then that wouldn't be a problem. So part of the issue is what kind of blight did you have?
Yeah.
What kind of blight? Okay. All right, well, I'll have to try and figure that out. Oh, but thank you for the advice.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Mm-hmm. You can at least get some photos on the the UW Plant Pathology, what is it? Plant Disease Diagnostic
Lab. Yeah. Or a lot of those fact sheets are also linked in the publications off the horticulture website, which is that hort.uwex.edu. And there's really good pictures of those tomato diseases. If in doubt, you can always just do a good cleanup.
That never hurts.
That's certainly what our Brian Huddleston, our plant pathologist, would say. He said, you're better off just doing a good cleanup.
Dr. Death was just on the show here recently. And in fact, on Halloween.
On Halloween. That was appropriate.
It was perfect to have him on for Halloween. Oh, man. Jerry in Jackson, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I have a question about putting leaves from our maple trees that have the black blotches on them.
Oh, black spot? Okay.
Yeah, pathogens, I guess it's called. In my vegetable garden.
Okay, so it's probably what you have is a disease called tar spot. Tar spot only affects maples and only certain types of maples, so it really won't affect your vegetables at all. But if you leave them hanging around, it probably, if the maples are close, will reinfect your maples.
Not going to kill the maples.
No.
But you know, it's kind of unsightly.
Yeah, and this is, we have a really nice fact sheet that Brian Huddleston wrote on tar spot. So if you go to, if you're comfortable with the internet, go to that hort.uwex.edu or just Wisconsin Horticulture and then black or tar spot, not black spot, tar spot. On maple, and that fact sheet will come up.
Yeah, I think I've got it up on our Facebook page too. A link to those sites.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jerry, for calling. Sue emailed us and said, "I have a dwarf sweet cherry tree in my yard, about 3 years old. In the spring, I found the young leaves near the ends of branches were curled up, and inside the leaves was what looked like moist soil. I'm sure this must be some insect activity, but what is it and what can I do to get rid of it or better yet, prevent it?"
So it sounds like probably one of the leaf rollers, and there are several of those. Generally, they don't do that much damage, so I would just keep an eye out in the spring for them and worry. Yeah, most of the time, you don't have to treat them or anything, even on a young tree.
No. Nora in Waukesha, hello.
Hi. I had a question further to the comment you made about the black walnut leaves. My leaf compost pile, which is huge and it's full of maple leaves, is right under a black walnut tree.
Oh.
I saw this before, but it could be that could be affecting the how good that compost is coming out of there.
Yeah, it might. The problem is that black walnuts produce a substance called juglone. Juglone will decompose, and it will decompose or break down in compost. However, if it's not completely decomposed when you're using that compost, it will affect the growth of other plants. So, yeah, if possible, move that compost pile away from the black walnut tree.
Okay, thanks.
Yep,
thanks a lot for calling. And Pat in Green Bay, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I, too, have a problem I have in the past with wintering over rosemary. But after being in Italy 2 years ago for 3 weeks, I noticed the calluses of my feet would melted right off. And I've come to realize that it's not so much keeping the soil wet, it's keeping the air around the rosemary moist. So I don't water it much, but what I have done now is those little pearls that you can buy that explode underwater, you know, they blow up and you can put them in your pots and it keeps your soil moist. Well, I use those little pearls around, just around the top of my rosemary pot, and those stay wet then all winter long in this dry house. And it keeps that rosemary nice and moist on the top without getting its roots wet. Does that make sense?
My philosophy on all of these is if it works for you, don't change. But those are usually those moisture crystals, and they do release water very slowly. So it probably is releasing some, but keeping the top wet and the bottom dry, I don't know how much it's doing that. I do think that, yes, trying to keep a little bit of humidity in the area is helpful. And then more importantly, what you're actually referring to is don't overwater the soil.
Yeah.
And when I do water it, those little pellets, they just hold the water and keep the plant nice from the ground up, I guess. I don't know. But I've been trying rosemary. I love to cook. And
for 3 years. This has worked for me. And 5 years prior to this,
That's great. I'm glad you found something that works for you.
Oh, thanks, Pat. Thanks for calling. My rosemary, I think it's about, I get to water it about once a week when I do limey. And I've got some fish emulsion stuff that, you know, I put a couple of tablespoons in a quart of water or a gallon of water and split a gallon of water between the two plants.
You know, it's so tricky because everybody's home is different.
Yeah.
So different. Their humidity is different. The amount of light that's coming in those windows is sometimes dramatically different. So it's really trial and error. If you find something that works for you, great.
Richard on Facebook writes, my brother in St. Paul has rototilled about a foot of leaves into his garden and then heavily fertilized it with urea, 46% nitrogen. Is that going to work?
Well, sure.
Yeah.
it'll break those leaves down pretty quickly.
It'll break them down pretty quick, and he'll get great plant growth next, next year.
Yeah.
Kathy on Facebook writes, I have to move 3 rose plants next week. Should I plant them in the ground or in a pot and store as an attached but unheated garage?
In the ground.
Yeah.
Always. If it's something that is normally in the ground, the best way to overwinter them is get them in the ground.
Bob in Eau Claire, thanks for calling, Bob. Hi.
Hi, guys. I have a follow-up question. Earlier you talked about hyacinths, and my wife likes the smell of hyacinth in the house, and she was wondering if she could plant hyacinth bulbs in flower pots, say in February, late February, whenever, so that they would bloom in the house and fill the house with that lovely smell.
Hyacinths are one of the more common forced bulbs. So, and there actually are special vases, which I guess you don't need to use, but it's a fairly tall vase with a narrow neck and then kind of a cup at the top to hold the bulb. And a lot of people purchase those, and then you just put water in the bottom of the vase and the hyacinths will sprout and go ahead and develop from that. I think they require a cold treatment. So the best way, easiest way for her to do this, here's your Christmas present for
her. That's what I was thinking.
Okay. Yeah. To go to a good quality bulb company and order hyacinths for forcing, and you can even order them right with the hyacinth vases, and you've got a great Christmas present for.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking when you were talking. Oh, what a great Christmas present. Oh, man. Nancy in New Richmond. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I have a question about some high bush cranberries. I had planted the bushes this later, like in June, and the deer ate all the leaves, but I have berries. So can I harvest those berries and eat them, or shall I cut the bushes down to ground level?
Okay, so as long as you're absolutely sure that they're high bush cranberries, you can eat them. So they are edible. They're kind of almost a translucent bright red color. And they're pretty tart.
I tried one just off the bush, yes.
You don't do that very often.
So you already know, but yes, you can do that. So, and I wouldn't worry about cutting them down or anything, because these are ones you don't want to cut because you'll lose the flowers for next spring.
Oh, okay. And then if the deer come back over the winter and nibble on the stems, is that going to affect the plant?
Not going to help us.
Yeah. So you may even want to put some snow fencing or something around them to keep the deer away.
Okay, I will try that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's turn to Chris in Milwaukee next. Let's see here. First, I have to hit the right button. Hi, Chris. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I missed part of your show. I was out picking my last box of raspberries from the bushes, and it made me think, gosh, your show is on. I better call and find out what to do with all of these vines for the winter.
Oh, so you're...
For your raspberries?
Yeah.
Usually we don't have to do too much for them. Raspberries are usually pretty hardy. Now, a lot of people, where you're telling me you're just finishing picking, those are the ever-bearing type. So some people will even completely mow those off in the fall. And some of our recommendations even are to get rid of all of them, canes and all in the fall, and then you only get one harvest in late summer instead of that early summer harvest and that late summer harvest. Mm-hmm. So if you want the other, you know, if you want two harvests, then you wait to prune out the old canes right after they bear fruit in early summer.
Oh, boy. Well, I have dark berries and then these ever-bearings. I have dark raspberries, and they were a couple of times early in the spring, but they have grown up and over a 10-foot fence and down again. And
wow.
Jeez.
I mean, I want to park my cars in the parking lot right now.
Well, then, you know, that's trim out the biggest, largest stem. Sounds like it's nice and healthy. Just don't trim them all out.
Yeah.
What about the little tiny ones that they, when the cane comes over and it sort of burrows down into the ground?
Well, that's how raspberries naturally reproduce themselves, is they send up new shoots, and then if the tip or they come down and touch the ground, they root there. So that's how they're spreading. A lot of people don't like that spread, so they'll only keep the suckers or the new growth up, and only a certain number of the healthier ones to be the bearing ones for the following year. And then they may dig out or prune back or get rid of ones that are spreading out past where they want. We do have a really nice publication called Growing Raspberries in Wisconsin that describes the pruning of them.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck, Chris.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. Good to hear your voice. Chris calls every so often, and it's good to hear her voice, to know that she's doing well. Robin in Portage. Hi, Robin. Thank you for calling.
Well, hi, both of you. I have an indoor plant problem. I transplanted, well, actually, I cut a jade plant off. It was getting too big, and I put them in new pots with a Miracle-Grow mixture. Now I have what looks like a gnat or a fruit fly only on those plants, but in the soil, and I don't know how to get rid of them.
Okay. Yeah, it's, if it's only in the soil or it comes up when you water it, these kind
of
fly up?
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds like fungus gnats. And they are in the potting soil. I think the easiest way to get rid of them, especially since you just recently transplanted these, is to take them out, shake all the potting soil and everything off of them, get rid of that potting soil. Actually, throw that out in the garden.
Yeah,
it's fine to put it in the garden, the potting soil, and then get a new bag of potting soil and replant them.
Yeah, that's going to be the easy way to get rid of them, and then that soil, you can use it, you know, it'll put it in a compost pile.
Yeah, the other, it's fine outside, you just don't want it inside.
Barb, another successful day, and the time has flown. Thank you so much. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
Absolutely, I always have fun.
Barb Larson, our horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. She will be back, I can promise you, and we'll do this again. Monday, Vets Day, we'll talk with retired Colonel Cole Kingseed about Major Dick Winters, the main subject of Band of Brothers. He's got a new book out. It's really interesting. And then we'll take a look at what's going on with the Wisconsin Vet Museum traveling exhibit program. All that to look forward to. Thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.